We want your feedback. Take our listener survey today and be entered to win one of three Google Home Hubs. It takes 5 minutes and will help us bring you better content in the new year. Check it out over at survey.futurecommerce.fm. Future Commerce is brought to you by PayPal. Did you realize that mobile shoppers spend 39% more time but less money on commerce websites compared to their desktop counterparts? There's a significant opportunity to improve mobile conversion rates while delivering a better buying experience. That is why PayPal has collaborated with 15 Magento system integrators and High Conversion to uncover what changes help and hurt the mobile checkout experience. For details on the program, learnings to date, and how to get involved, visit mobileoptimize.org today.
Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex is the leader of tax technology solutions and services for corporations worldwide. They're trusted by over half of the Fortune 500. Vertex Cloud meets sales and use tax solutions for businesses of all kinds. Visit them online today at vertexsmb.com. Emarsys is the largest independent marketing platform company in the world. Their software enables truly personalized one-to-one interactions between marketers and customers across all channels. They help you build loyalty and enrich the customer journey while increasing your revenue. Go to emarsys.com/futurecommerce to request a demo and see for yourself how Emarsys can help your company scale marketing decisions. That's emarsys, emarsys.com/futurecommerce.
Welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about cutting edge and next generation commerce. I'm Brian.
And I'm Philip. That's how we open a show. You sound a little groggy, a little foggy.
I am a little foggy. I'm just kind of getting over a cold here. So
that's what happens when you drink as much future as Brian does. You know, sometimes it burns going down, and sometimes your voice takes a toll. And he does it for you. That's how much he loves you.
Yeah, yeah, it might have something to do with the January push, cold wave that's flowing through my family right now.
January cold wave. Oh gosh, yeah, that's kind of hitting everybody. We don't have that in Florida, but that's okay. Life is good. What do we have in Florida? Oh, we have Future Stores Miami coming pretty soon. So we've got a bunch of shows actually that we'll be at between now and Shop Talk. Let's run them down real quick. And if you're around, we'd love to see you. So I'll be at Future Stores Miami.
And I will be at Etel West.
Yeah. So that's super cool. And then we'll both be together again at Shop Talk in March. And we hope to see you at one of those three shows. If we saw you at NRF, saw a lot of people that listen to Future Commerce at NRF, so that was cool. True. And it was really, really great to see all of you. We'll be sporting our new swag, and I think the cat might be out of the bag by the time this episode lands, but you'll know it when you see it. We've got some cool stuff coming, and we're really excited about it. So
coming, it's here. Yeah. It's here.
we've spent the last 8 months working on a rebrand, and we've figured out a lot. Actually, I would love to do a retrospective at some point of what it takes to actually, you know, grow up and be a fully realized brand. And we're figuring that out. It's a lot of work.
Super exciting though. I love our new brand. I'm really excited about it. I'm excited where we're headed. And I think that, the brand's a good reflection of that. So,
and it's guided, in some way by the results of our survey. We're taking the data and we're crunching those numbers, and we're helping to make Future Commerce a better show, that we all enjoy. I know I love Future Commerce and I want you to enjoy it more too. So we're starting to compile that feedback. If you have not still entered our survey, we've got it open for another 2 weeks from the time of this recording, so until about the end of the first week of February 2019. And so if you haven't taken it yet, you can go on over to survey.futurecommerce.fm, and it's about a 4 to 5 minute survey. It's super easy to get through. If you've ever listened to the show even once, that means you right now listening to the show at this moment. Go over to survey.futurecommerce.fm, fill out the survey. And when you do, you'll be entered to win one of three Google Home Hubs. And that'll be on us because we just love you that much. So do that now. Do it.
Feedback is super helpful. So thank you.
And we'll and it'll be really good for us to hear from you, because we love hearing from you. Okay. And speaking of hearing, you're going to hear from us. This is our annual predictions show. And Brian is going all out this year. Brian has way more content than I do. And he's really put a lot of thought into this. This year, I'm just, can I start?
Yeah, I'd start us off.
If I had to start, I'm going to so regret ever saying anything of this nature whatsoever. If I had to start off a 2019 predictions episode, I would probably do it. You ever see that meme where the guy is set up in front of a college campus with like a folding table? He's got a sign on the front that says "Change my mind." It's like something controversial, and it's like under that, it's like just says "Change my mind." My prediction, my number one, my first. I shouldn't say number one. My first prediction, future of what will happen in retail in 2019. Death of Apple. Change my mind. That's
bold. It's bold.
It's not going to happen in the way that we think it will. It's not going to go out with a bang. It'll go out with a whimper. I believe that we see the decline of Apple and its dominance in the marketplace. Some people are already sort of predicting that, the slip in the stock. They've still been successful moving a lot of handsets, but they're starting to do a lot of the things that unsuccessful brands do. Right? Brands that are on the backside of the adoption curve, brands that are now legacy, they're starting to do a lot of those things and make a lot of missteps. They have a tremendous amount of friction in retail right now. They have a lot of half and half realized products, like the toilet roll disguised as a smart speaker. They have a lot of promised technology that still hasn't landed, like wireless charging for AirPods. And while consumers love their products, Apple loves to make their products harder and harder to use and more expensive every year and with diminishing returns. And I think that Face ID, and while it's cool, and more expensive iPhones are interesting gimmicks, I think that other companies are starting to do it better. And I'm an Apple fanboy. So I think that this is scary in retail, because a lot of what we think of around retail experience comes from our knowledge of how Apple has changed the way that we think of how brands that were historically, remember, Apple used to be a computer company that sold in local mom and pop computer stores, and they've transformed into a direct to consumer brand. I think it doesn't bode well that you know, the experiential retail curve ends with the king of experiential retail and direct to consumer, you know, evolution starting to be on its way out. And I think that that's something we should all start to look very hard at and start to learn from. So yeah, death of Apple.
So there's a couple comments that I'll add to that. And I love that prediction. In that I think that Apple's had a couple of strategies, innovation strategies that, you know, that they're starting to struggle with, in that Apple's sort of like one of their best strategies in the past has been to take an existing technology and then say, oh, we can do that way better, right? And come out with something that people actually want to use and is easy to use. And I think that one of the challenges that they faced was they kind of became the top dog, and they kind of had to step out into the front of innovation at that point in many ways. And so,
yeah,
what you know, then you see them start to release features like FaceTime and stuff that's more experimental. And it's, you know, that's sort of their, you know, they kind of have to run that as an innovation strategy, because sure, everyone's sort of waiting to see what they do now and thinking of ways of doing it better. And so, you know, it's hard to be in that position, because you've not traditionally been a company that's focused on innovation in that way, where you're pushing the boundaries of what technology can do, kind of like, you know, what Microsoft was doing back in the 90s, right? And I think that they're kind of hitting that point that Microsoft did back when Apple started to take over, right?
I mean, this is so just yes, 100%. And I think a lot of people are really impressed with the direction Microsoft has gone, which is adopting in every way open source, right?
Bingo.
And acquiring trusted technology brands to underscore their commitment to open source. And Apple has done, you know, has done a lot of things verbally. They've said that they've committed to open source. I mean, we've seen things like Swift, which is, you know, interesting. But I heard 10 years ago that, you know, Bonjour and all sorts of other protocols that were supposed to make, you know, messaging between people, human beings, easier. And instead they've become more, I mean, Apple's always been a walled garden. It's never been more of a walled garden than it is today.
It just sounds like Microsoft was really like,
it really is. Yeah. It really is. And I think that's the thing is like, they're not going away. They're not going to fade into oblivion.
Right.
But we have seen for the very first time in, I don't know, something like 19 years, you know, Apple just slashed its earnings forecast. You know, people are not buying the new devices, of which there are like 13. I don't know. Apple can't afford to raise prices anymore, and they're creating more durable devices that don't need to be replaced based on feature set every single year. It's interesting, but at the same time, by the way, this leads me into a sort of a tangential thing, which is we see other brands that I think, you know, that are in completely different fields, by the way. Brands that have been through their share of turmoil that are making a resurgence. And I think things fall in and out of fashion. Apple, unfortunately, played King of the Hill for so long.
Right.
They may have just fallen out of fashion.
Exactly.
You know? And yep. Even if they've done things very well, I think that they've pretty much lost... I'm sort of already on the record of saying they pretty much lost the AI wars, you know, 5-7 years ago. I don't think anyone's going to outpace, you know, as a cloud company and a cloud first company. You have Amazon is the absolute dominant player. A lot of people are, you know, are eschewing Amazon for Azure and other in Google and other services. They actually have tremendous investment in tech to build massive, you know, neural networks and computationally, you know, actual computational farms for doing real machine learning and AI, and you're never going to see Apple get to that point at this point. Now they have a lot of money, but they don't have a lot of time. They're really far behind on that, you know, on that front. And I think that, you know, they slept on a lot of technology. So we'll see.
Or maybe they don't have to go that route. Like, look at what Microsoft did. I mean, actually, I love that you brought up Microsoft, and I didn't intend to talk about them, but I am so stoked on Microsoft right now in that they have a very diversified business, extremely diversified. They're making wise investments in terms of the types of businesses they acquire and invest in. And I heard a rumor that, and this is this is probably confirmed fact on the internet, and I just need to look it up, but that they've actually, Windows doesn't even really exist as division anymore. It's split out into Office and Azure, and they're 100% focused on building tools for businesses. Instead of being an operating system business. I mean, that change happened a long time ago, but I think it's really come full circle. And I think this just happened in the past 6 months that they've done this. So,
right. So I've now, I took up 10 minutes for one prediction. I don't think that that's sustainable for us in this show. So, I'm sorry about that. I'll make sure to keep it a little shorter.
No, it's good. Some of mine will be fast. Some of mine will be really fast. One thing that, okay.
Who says so, now?
Yeah. This might be like an hour and a half long show.
Oh, no. I physically don't have the stamina for it. Let's do it. Go.
Let's do it. Okay. So here's one of the things that I see coming this year. We're going to see a lot more creative and tailored experiences and offers focused on adding value, not discounting. I think retailers have finally reached fatigue, discounting fatigue.
And retailers or consumers?
The consumers never reach discounting fatigue. No, but retailers have, in that they realize that, you know, consumers don't need the deepest of discounts all the time in order for them to purchase products. There's a smart discounting strategy out there, but it doesn't mean dropping prices so low that it's cheaper to buy a discounted product than a secondhand product on the secondary market. Because let me tell you, that happens a lot right now. And so I think that we're going to see a lot more thought go into smart campaigns that, you know, are more about, you know, adding value, adding exclusives, building brands than just the deepest of discounts. And maybe smarter pricing too. Like, instead of dropping it, you know, this is crazy. I went to New York just this past, for NRF. So what, last week?
Last week. It's all blending together.
It is really all blending together. I've been traveling too much. I didn't check the weather beforehand. And of course I went with just a very light coat, and it was way colder than that. And I was like, all right, I need a coat. So I went on to Amazon and I was like, hey, you know, I don't want to spend a lot on this. I've already got some nice coats at home. I don't need to spend a lot of money on this. So I dug around, and maybe within 15 minutes, I landed on a $40 coat from Ben Sherman that was sold by a third party retailer of sorts. And when I got that coat, it had a $280 retail tag on it. Something is broken,
right? For sure.
And so, and all, by the way, that was a great experience. Like, it was one day free, yeah, one day shipping right to our office. You know, it's like amazing. Anyway, so something is broken with the way that we're pricing products and that we're marketing products. And, you know, I think that we're going to see a lot more focus on just being very creative around how we go to market and how we price.
Yeah, you didn't say the one word on here that I wanted you to say.
Which is focus on the life cycle of the customer.
Yeah, it's the year of the customer.
It is the year of the customer. It is the year of the customer, exactly. So it's your fault. You said that on the last show.
I kind of actually believe it. That's the thing I hate so much.
Totally.
I think clienteling is the word I was trying to get you to say.
Right here on my notes. So clienteling and focus on more touch points and really building a connection with your customer that you do provide them with additional value. Maybe it's exclusive things that they couldn't get otherwise, except for by, spending with you or having a relationship with you as a brand. But also, this is going to, this is going to be accelerated by a focus on technologies that can increase your touch with the customer. So like PWAs, progressive web apps, where you're going to be able to, have someone, within browser opt in to push notifications and be able to communicate with them even better and, have a real relationship with them as opposed to just pushing a discount at them.
Yeah. Okay, great. I could talk about that for an hour and a half as well. So
we might want to do a whole show on that.
Yeah, I will say I'd be remiss if I didn't give a counterpoint to say I'm going to go ahead and call that anybody who's professing PWA as the thing, like it is a one implementation of a style of customer interaction, right? That is specific, like. It's vague and it's just vague enough that people are excited about it. Especially Google, they seem to be very excited about it. It's the ones that coined the term. I'm not sure that we all understand what progressive web apps mean. I mean, technologically, I understand what it means. I think, like anything, there will be good implementations and bad implementations. And unfortunately, like HTML5, bad implementations are the ones that get a lot of press. And I really hope that, you know, people who are heavily invested in you know, telling a story around PWA, like Adobe, don't take any heat for it. I'm concerned that when you lead with one implementation of technology and retailers, you know, cling on to that, that it's going to be really hard to tell them what they should be doing right when they're hanging some sort of future roadmap on a particular implementation of a named technology. So I'll draw caution there.
I would agree with that, except for I think it's just one part of the strategy. Like if you're hanging your whole strategy on PWAs, that's ridiculous. Like yeah. I think it, and actually I think with that, what I'll say is there's going to be a lot of investment in technology that, and I cannot believe I'm about to say this word. So, you know,
this is how, you know, we're getting old people.
Yeah. I think that retailers actually have the ability to invest in omnichannel technologies this year for real. And provide experiences that the dream of omnichannel is actually going to come to life in 2019.
Mm-hmm. And the dream of the 90s is alive in Portland. Here's the problem that we have. We've just now you could play buzzword bingo now. Let's play future commerce retail buzzword bingo.
Oh my gosh.
You get the center space for free. We already gave you omnichannel and we gave you year of the customer. So, let's knock another one off there. Retail apocalypse. Something I cannot get past is the phrase that I heard uttered and then kept repeating at NRF, which is, millennials don't have a short attention span. They're just highly sensitive to things that are boring. And I think that, you know, the retail apocalypse that everybody was touting, which by the way still gets used in mainstream press pretty much everywhere, that phrase keeps being mentioned, usually in conjunction with Sears. It's just the end of boring retail. And I think about the places that I frequent, and I do not go to boring stores, right? I like to think that I, you know, naturally gravitate to places that have interesting experiences that in many cases are ones that I can share with other people. So I think specifically, you know, like, instead of going to the ice cream store that the ice cream shop that I used to take my kids to, we go to the Thai rolled ice cream place. Now, I don't know that I like it any better, but you know what? My kids love watching it be made. And I think that there's something about, you know, you're seeing this in some other interesting luxury good brands. You know, I go to the mall and I see Coach, for instance, and I can actually watch them engrave and create a luggage tag. And it's like I'm having an engagement of something that's sort of bespoke in the store. I think about when you and I were at Filson in a few months ago, and you know, you can actually physically watch people mend the merchandise. I think about Canada Goose, who, you know, I want to be able to, you know, try this jacket in a cold room environment to make sure it's, you know, the piece that, you know, I want that will keep me warm, on the cold winter days. Like those are truly, you know, those are truly putting you closer to the product and make you feel more intimate in that purchase decision. It connects you deeper to the brand. I really feel like boring retail, we're seeing the very end of boring retail in 2019. And I think that that means exciting retail is actually happening. And it looks very different, right, than what we thought it would look like. I think everybody thought you were going to walk into stores and deal with magic mirrors. You know, I've yet to come across a real magic mirror that was either A, magic, or B, a useful mirror in an environment that I actually felt like it was useful or in everyday life. I think instead we're going to see the companies we want to frequent, especially the big ones. They come up a lot, like the Nordstroms of the world. We'll see them actually invest in technology that will be assistive in your shopping experience that doesn't rely on me having to learn how to work the technology, you know, the aged legacy technology that you're going to deploy in your stores. Anyway, that's that. Boring retail. Finito.
I love that. I love that. I think that, that like our last two predictions play really well together.
Yeah, I actually. Think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
Speaking of retail apocalypse, I think we're going to see continued consolidation in retail this year.
Yeah, we said that last year. I don't think we were prepared quite for how much of it we would. I mean, could you have predicted Toys R Us, you know, folding in 2018? It's not something I would have ever thought. I mean, speaking of which, the resurgence of FAO Schwarz. Like, what's that all about? That's crazy.
The brand exists. The brand still exists. Therefore, someone took advantage of it. I mean,
the store now re-exists, and there's some really interesting stuff happening there.
No, that's what I'm saying. Is like somehow the brand stuck around, and someone acquired it and turned it into something awesome again.
Yep.
Which, I mean, I could see that happening with Toys R Us at some point. Potentially.
Or Sears. No,
Sears is still alive. It's not dead yet.
Yeah.
I'm not dead yet.
I think Sears has more than a flesh wound at this moment, but that's interesting stuff. Sorry. So you were saying
I think we've seen so much this year. We're going to see so much this coming year. Actually, you know, it was a really sneaky one that didn't get quite as much fanfare. At least it took me until now to catch on to it. Did you see that Walmart bought art.com?
No.
And get this, and this is going to lead into another. I'm going to save this for later, actually. This is going to be my big prediction of the year. So we'll save that for the end.
You can't do that to us.
All right, fine.
You can't do that. You can't tease something. They're going to listen to the end of the show. We know they will.
Okay. All right. I'll just dive right into my big prediction then.
Do it. Oh my gosh. Here it comes.
Excited. Here we go. So this is the year. I'm going to title it two things. One, the year that Amazon has to compete. And two, the year of Walmart.
Oh my gosh.
In that, I think that two things. One, I think that retail tech providers are maturing to the point now. I mean, we were just at NRF, and I kind of hinted at this earlier in a previous episode, but they're erasing the competitive advantage that Amazon had from a technological standpoint, and now mid-market retailers can purchase in and create a system that is competitive with Amazon's system, in that they've got, you know, two-day shipping vendors that they can work with. They have same-day shipping vendors they can work with. They've got, experiences they can provide that, frankly, are better than Amazon's shopping experience. They've got ways they can communicate with their customers that are just as good as the way that Amazon communicates with their customers. As a mid-market retailer right now, you have the ability to go out there and build an experience that actually is at the level or close to the level that Amazon provides. Close enough such that your customer doesn't care. And I think that is going to be hard for Amazon to deal with. Amazon's going to have to change the way that they think about the retail this coming year, because they're going to have to compete. Plus, the rising cost of rent means that I think that the cost of selling at this level of service, this Amazon level of service, these mid-market retailers, it's the same level of cost for them or similar level of cost to selling through brick and mortar stores in at least in urban areas.
Hmm.
And so at a certain point, it's like, of course, I'm going to invest in my online presence. I can reach more customers. It costs me about the same as selling in brick and mortar, and I can do it at the same level as Amazon. Like this is a new game. This is a new game we're coming up on here. And so logistics and supply chain and software and all the things that Amazon has had as an advantage are starting to go to the wayside. Even assortment, in that these retailers can sell through Google and through Google Shopping and other comparison services and other marketplaces, you don't have to go to Amazon to be competitive anymore.
You're 100% right. I can't argue with that at all.
Future Commerce is brought to you by PayPal. Did you know cart abandonment is 86% higher on mobile than desktop? PayPal has collaborated with 15 Magento system integrators in high conversion to help close the mobile gap while delivering an improved buying experience. The Mobile E-Commerce Optimization Initiative was formed to understand why the gap in mobile and desktop conversions persist and to provide practical industry insights to help e-commerce providers succeed in mobile sales. Participating merchants can choose from a range of standardized checkout optimization experiments that make sense for their business model. For additional details on how to get involved, results to date, and testing methodology, visit mobileoptimize.org today.
Future Commerce is brought to you by Vertex. Vertex provides cloud and on-premise solutions that can be tailored to specific industries for every major line of tax, including sales and use, income, value added, and payroll. Vertex Cloud is the SaaS solution that automates sales and use tax, including calculation and returns. With multiple service levels and flexible pricing models, Vertex Cloud meets the sales and use tax needs for businesses of all sizes. From recognizable brands like Honda, Pepsi, Verizon, and small businesses the world over. Find out more today at vertexsmb.com and be sure to mention Future Commerce Podcast to get 15 months for the price of 12. Once again, that's vertexsmb.com. Emarsys is the largest independent marketing platform company in the world. Powered by artificial intelligence, the Emarsys marketing platform enables truly personalized interactions between marketers and customers across all channels, building loyalty, enriching the customer journey, and increasing your revenue. Each day, Emarsys connects more than 2,200 brands with 3.2 billion customers all over the world. Emarsys delivers over 350 million personalized interactions across email, mobile, social, and web. To learn more about how Emarsys can help your company scale marketing decisions and actions, visit emarsys.com/futurecommerce and request your demo today. That's Emarsys, emarsys.com/futurecommerce.
Some of the technology that we've seen, though, and as much as I love NRF and I love innovation labs, and I love, you know, these innovative experiences, for some reason, if a mid-sized, you know, regional brand were to invest in the type of technology that allows, you know, just walk out shopping, it's likely going to be a little clunkier and not as slick as Amazon's implementation of the same thing.
So early,
I'm just saying, that's the kind of thing. Okay, I mean, you're talking other stuff, I suppose, like, you know, 2-day delivery, I don't know. I'm just thinking about the other ways that we see technology startups sort of mature, and I'm hesitant because I always come back to the thing of, you know, well, what else could they be investing in to grow that isn't, can you be like, okay, let me rephrase it. Sorry. Can you be a successful, you know, digitally native online brand in 2019 and not offer 2-day
That's a great
free
question.
Shipping? Because I think that there's plenty of brands that don't offer, you know, free shipping 2-day. I don't know. I tend to want to agree with you. It sounds right on the face of it. And I think Walmart in particular, you know,
that's a different story. Walmart's its own story, which is why I think this is a separate story. Like, that's part two of the story, not only is Amazon going to have to compete against mid-market retailers, but Walmart is coming on so strong right now. Their marketplace is one, I've heard from retailers that it's easy to work with and that the team there is really great to work with. Two, its assortment is actually pretty impressive. Oftentimes I'll when I'm shopping on Amazon or Walmart, I'll flip and back and forth between the two and just kind of see what the difference is. And frankly, when it comes to most purchasing, Walmart's got enough assortment to have me covered. Three, I think people are kind of getting sick of the rising cost of Prime. And the fact is Walmart doesn't require Prime to get free shipping. There is a minimum threshold for spending, but it's not high. And people have Netflix to, you know, they have video streaming services. The only reason why a lot of people keep Prime right now, I think, is that, you know, they're used to shopping on Amazon, one, and they've had it for so long. And two, the Prime Video is killing it. They're killing it right now. And some people are willing to pay the price of Prime just for streaming video and Amazon Originals.
I think if you were to, well, look at the competition, you look at Netflix, and Netflix is up to something like $16 a month, right? And for that's $192 a year, which is more expensive than Amazon, Prime, and
but
all
everyone's
in, right?
paying
and
for
you
both
get
anyway,
so much more
already,
right? Yeah, a lot of people are. I don't know that everybody's paying for both. I feel like there's, you know, by the way, this is brings up something completely tangential. You know, there was a tweet that I saw a couple days ago. Dan Grover on Twitter said something to the effect of, you know, Netflix is better than cable. But when I look at Netflix's new releases, you know, I have to look at Rotten Tomatoes to filter out
their
B movies that they make. And Amazon's better than Walmart, but I have to check, you know, Wirecutter and fiddle with, you know, the ranking controls to, you know, filter out, you know, garbage products and, you know, bad resellers who game things to the top. And it's like every aggregator that you actually use, whose job is to rank and present items to you, you actually have to work against their presentation and ranking and bring in external sources of info to get to the actual truth.
It's true for Walmart and Amazon. Like I think that Amazon has just people are just as suspicious of Amazon reviews as they are of Walmart reviews right now. That's why there's entire websites dedicated to, you know, I wish I had this site with me right now, but are these reviews real? Essentially you can put in, Amazon, product URLs into the site and they'll give you a ranking on how real they think the review set is. Which is just crazy. We have to have something like that, you know? And I do think you're right. Like Wirecutter, I mean, we're reaching way back to our episode with Jason L. Baptiste when he called that out as one of the most interesting things he saw ahead this year. And I think he was, or at that year that we talked to him, I think he was dead on. We're looking to experts more than sort of the masses to tell us if something is good, because frankly, the masses don't always have it right. And also you can have a phenomenal review for something in one pricing tier, you know, or aggregated set of reviews in one pricing tier versus another pricing tier. And those products may be competitive with each other. They may not. And so it's really hard to know, you know, when you're purchasing something that's good. So I think having those expert voices is actually a big part of commerce moving forward. And we're going to see more sites like the Wirecutter coming soon. Just to kind of finish things out, in the third quarter, Walmart grew its online sales by 43%, and it's continuing to climb like crazy. And this is the kick. So we've seen a ton of acquisitions just in the past couple of years by Walmart, additionally native brands. They just acquired art.com. Mark Lore, who's Walmart's head of U.S. head of commerce or e-commerce, said that, you know, he said one day that they could own upwards of 40 digitally native brands. And that's probably four times what they have right now, I think. Should probably look that up. But I think that the point is that they're aggressively pursuing more digitally native brands. They're going to find a way to bring those to market in different ways, and they're going to use sort of their brick and mortar footprint to have an edge on Amazon that I think that Amazon doesn't, maybe they don't know like how important this is, but I think that Walmart could actually be more than a thorn in Amazon's side. It could actually be genuinely competitive with Amazon in terms of online sales. And I think that that could be I think there's a lot of people out there that would probably disagree with that.
I would say they took two fundamentally different paths. One, created in-house brands under other names in an effort to, you know, sort of trick you into buying from them direct, right? Amazon Basics and all their white labels. And the other took the opposite path, which is we're going to acquire the brands that you love already and learn from them so that we can increase your engagement with us, you know, in new ways and attract, you know, a different consumer, especially, you know, a more online centric digitally native consumer. And that consumer just, you know, happens to love these hip brands. And I think that they still serve two different customers, and those are customers that, you know, will continue to exist in 2019. But I think you're spot on that. I think there's more of there's a growing trend of people to seek out, the digitally native brands, that don't have to fit into, the rest of what a big box store has to offer, and they can still do that. You know, Walmart can still benefit from that. So
I would love to hear a negative view of where Walmart is, and you know, have someone tell us we're wrong. Cause right now I see a lot of momentum and, it's interesting. All right. Yeah. I've been talking for a while. You're up.
I'll say, you know, 2019 practical AR everywhere. I'll give you an example. Augmented reality is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I was buying a portable coffee maker for a hiking trip that I'm going on, and it uses Nespresso pods. So you can imagine it's a small little, you know, small little thing that you put an espresso pod in it, and you use a pump, and then it makes your coffee for you, you know, by the campfire. It's going to be lovely. For absolutely, you know, for much to my surprise, on the product detail page on the Amazon app, there's a button that says, view this in your home, as if I ever needed to view a portable coffee maker in the context of my home. But right there was the button. So I'm like, I'm going to definitely push that button. And what do you know? The camera fires up and I'm looking at the, you know, little portable Nespresso, you know, pod, you know, hiking coffee, you know, doohickey on my kitchen table. And I kind of loved it. In fact, I did not believe that it was the size that it actually was. And then I realized, all right, you know what? So then I set out to prove that how bad their AR must be. Well, actually it's pretty darn good, because if I looked at a product detail page, yeah, the thing fits, you know, very comfortably in the palm of your hand. It's not much, you know, bigger than, you know, a closed fist. They got it pretty, it was pretty good. And that was really surprising. Like, just having that as a thing that I didn't even know I wanted to do definitely increased my propensity to want to shop through Amazon. And it definitely increased my desire to have that particular product. I think that we're going to see that pretty much everywhere at the end of 2019. And I think that there's very little to stop it. What we're going to have to see for it to come to smaller brands, you know, in the way that you described for small brands to be able to compete with Amazon, is you're going to need a whole heck of a lot of technology that helps those brands, you know, create the digital assets needed to actually power that. So no longer are you, so this is the challenge of a retailer in 2019, is it's no longer just about being a successful, you know, a successful manufacturer of a product and the successful steward of a brand that people love. You also now have to own things like digital assets and models. And if you're in manufacturing, you probably have a lot of the stuff specifically from CAD for the actual manufacturing process. But I'm thinking more and more, you know, if you're not a furniture company and you're in apparel, or you have something a little less, you know, obvious, it's like it's they're soft goods or textiles or something to that effect, you have a much bigger challenge, because your retail life cycle is so fast. And I'm interested to see how those things sort of play out as retailers, you know, or as manufacturers, actual brands have to start, they have to be omni-channel now with digital assets, is what I'm trying to say. AR everywhere means that you don't just have to be omni-channel as a retailer. You have to be omni-channel in the way that you create and distribute digital assets. And wow, that sounds really challenging. And some brands will do it really, really well. And I think the ones that do that are going to do it exceptionally well are the ones who will be tooled from the get-go to do that. We're going to have a very hard time seeing storied and iconic brands make that leap, and we'll see massive consumer adoption and more digitally native brands that do that from day one. So yeah, finally, practical AR everywhere. Yeah, I know. We've been only barking at that for 3.5 years. So
yeah.
I don't know. What do you think about that? It's kind of hard to say no to.
Yeah, I know. I think you're right. I mean, I think, you know, maybe not everywhere, but it's going to be something that you'll actually, you know, use or take part in multiple places. And
yeah, I think once it comes to Instagram, if I had to put it into something that you can grok, I think Instagram has AR as not just a selfie facing thing for you to play with, but as an actual practical forward facing thing. It's not the selfie camera, it's the outward facing camera. I think we see Instagram apply that in a big way, especially around product search. Google Lens is already doing this, and that powers Google Shopping for a lot of things.
We're right at the cusp.
And I think it will be everywhere once Instagram gets it. It will be everywhere. You know, once Apple dies and everybody only has Android phones, I think we're right there. I'm going to call 2019 as that, you know, that's when we cross over the tipping point.
I love it. I think it's real.
Back to you, Brian.
I do. All right. So here's another interesting one. We talked a little bit about some, you know, churn in retail. Here's an interesting one. I think retail wages are going to rise this year. And that more. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
No,
there's
way.
Been a shortage in tell retail labor. This is a real thing. WSJ
is
chronicled it. Chain Store Age had an article about it earlier this year. This is a really big gap in the labor market, and so not only is it a big gap in the labor market, but I think the types of skills that are going to be required to be an effective, you know, brand ambassador essentially are going to it's already requires more than we've required from retail store associates in the past. So they have to use more technology. They're going to be doing more interaction with the digital teams, because as we do more of what I said earlier, the clienteling and passing data back and forth between you know, the digital accounts and in-store experience, we're going to see a higher level of expertise necessary to handle those types of systems and interactions with the customer. And so there's going to be more training involved. There's going to be, you know, more technology invested in empowering those associates. And ultimately, it's going to be about having that same level of experience online, in-store, everywhere, where it's not boring. It's, you're being well taken care of. It's a true retail, you know, relationship. And I mentioned this in a couple episodes, was it last episode, a couple episodes again ago from NRF Floor. I think that we're going to see more blend between B2C and B2B, where you're going to have B2B type interactions happen at a B2C level, just like we're seeing a lot of B2C technology spill over into B2B. And so it's going to be almost like a purchasing type relationship. And it's going to be bigger sales. It's going to be longer term relationships. It's, you know, it's that life cycle of the customer. Locking in that customer is one of the most important things that retailers can do in terms of, you know, acquiring a customer is hard. Keeping a customer is better. And so, I think that, yeah, that we're going to see a lot of investment and a lot of change in the types of skill sets that are required for retail. Therefore, we're going to see wages go up.
So good. Yeah, I can get on board with that. I like that. I like when my wage goes up, so that's, I can get behind that. Can I take a stab at one? We've been talking about secondhand commerce, and, you know, basically since June, I think has sort of been the, you know, so 6 or 7 months now, we've really noticed not only a huge trend towards brands that focus specifically only on, you know, secondary markets or secondary, you know, secondhand sales, that are, you know, marketplace driven and very vertical centric, you know, around, you know, luxury goods or sneakers or something to that effect. One that caught my eye recently was, that the American Cancer, Society, has what they call a discovery shop, which is a, you know, a basically a donation center for, you know, loved ones, for people who have, passed away due to cancer, to, donate their goods, and all funds and proceeds go to, you know, fight, you know, and fight and find a cure for cancer. And what's really interesting about it is the way that they're positioning it among the consumer as, you should shop here because it supports a cause that you care about. And that sounds very familiar to me, because it's basically what the Tom's brand was promising. It's, you know, charitable commerce. It's the, you know, social good, you know, some might call it slacktivism, you know, sort of mentality. But I think it meets secondhand commerce in that we don't have to continue, like, in order for a brand to grow from the ground up, they have to continue to differentiate themselves. And you see, you know, product line expansion, you see goods and services expansion. You find that Tom's is now a coffee shop because they need people to engage with the brand more. And it starts to dilute the original, you know, core purpose and cause, whereas secondhand commerce doesn't need to do that, right? It does. You can still have a charitable purpose, but, you know, if you can imagine, for instance, I'll give you a practical example. If you can imagine, for instance, a GameStop, which only, you know, or something like a GameStop, which, you know, only sold used or previously used merchandise, you know, video games, you know, and various accessories and, you know, consoles and that sort of thing, which, you know, is a very, very large part of GameStop's revenue. But, you know, certain portions of the proceeds went to support, you know, organizations like, you know, women gamers and disability access for, you know, folks who, you know, there's like Microsoft has made a big investment in accessible gaming devices for people with disabilities. Those are the kinds of things that I think that people might actually flock to if we could find ways, if we could find and amplify the brands and the companies, the retailers that are doing this well. I think that we'll see that actually begin to happen in 2019 as people become more accustomed to shopping for secondhand goods off of, you know, the eBays of the world, and Letgo and, you know, other, you know, sort of closed marketplaces or local centric marketplaces. So that's secondhand commerce, meets charitable commerce.
I love that. Prediction for 2019. In fact, I'll piggyback on that a little bit. I think secondhand commerce continues to thrive. In fact, there's a phenomenal report that ThredUp put out. ThredUp's a secondhand retailer. It's threadup.com/retail on secondhand commerce in 2018. And the stats they put on this, and you can go read the report, are just, it's a huge trend. It's going to continue to be a trend. They're predicting that by 2027, that secondhand commerce is actually going to be a bigger market than even fast fashion. And this is just in the clothing market. I think secondhand commerce goes way bigger than just clothes, obviously. But it's obvious that secondhand commerce is something that was really difficult to control and capture before. And now it's becoming so much easier because of the internet. So you can build verified secondhand markets where you can control your brand. You can control, you know, to some degree pricing. My prediction is that we're going to see more brands build out their own secondary markets. And really, I think that's going to be, I think it's going to be good for consumers in that they're going to get more verification of things and they're going to get more, you know,
for sure,
more ability to, yeah, even curation. Yeah, totally. Curation, absolutely. But it's also going to be good for brands in that they're going to be able to make sure that they're, you know, one, able to serve those markets, and two, be able to, you know, and profit from those markets. Three, be able to make sure that people are getting a good brand experience no matter when they're purchasing their product. So, yeah.
Yeah, not to rail on it, but you saw a Stadium Goods acquisition earlier this year, or in 2018. You saw Mark Benioff, and many others invest in companies like StockX, who, you know, they're all around the sneaker market where authentication and verification is paramount. And they provide, you know, basically escrow type services to verify and authenticate that the goods are legit and curate products, you know, that are specific to certain niches. And I think that you're 100% right in that there are certain markets where that's very highly prized and very valuable. And we're going to see a tremendous growth. You know, this is a tremendous place of growth.
And we've been calling that for a while, but I feel like, 2019 into 2020, 2021, this is just going to be a massive trend. So, all right, give me one more from you, and then we'll wrap it up.
Yeah. Well, you know what? There's a lot that's been said. I think one more that I'll get on, which is we have to repurpose a lot of this retail space.
Good one.
Right. So there's a lot of retail space that, you know, I think could be could be repurposed. And I'll let you guess as to what those could be. I'll tell you one thing that's happening here in Palm Beach, and it's not just here. It's, you know, it's in other places as well. I am impressed with a private high-speed rail company called Brightline, which was just invested in by Richard Branson, and now is co-owned and has could be filing for IPO pretty soon with Virgin Trains US. It's a high-speed rail that was piloted between Miami and West Palm Beach, and soon will extend up to Orlando and then over to Tampa. And they've got three or four other markets they're looking to launch into, including rail service in Southern California to Las Vegas and some other metro areas. What's really interesting about them is that you need public-private partnership to do things like rail. I mean, especially when you have passenger rail, there's a lot of regulation around that. And so there's a lot of public-private partnership. And I'll tell you what, it's really, really hard, to be successful in public transit when your only source of revenue is ridership, right? Is actual adoption. Well, that's one of the things that Brightline is trying to solve, because what they have done is they're taking the stations and the areas immediately around the stations and making them destinations, all of which are commercial real estate and residential real estate that they own.
Whoa.
Okay. And the idea here is that they're not just making money on ridership. They're making the places that are, you know, hubs for transportations, destinations to live and to work and to shop. And they are the benefactors, right? The company itself is creating small pockets of community within cities. And there's probably some downside to that. We could talk about gentrification. You could talk about the things that come along with that. But when I'm looking at what retail space and condos and CrossFit gyms and the things that are popping up around these stations, and I'm looking at how massive, how much change is happening in these areas in such a short period of time, and that you've created a commerce hub around, a mode of transport that we haven't had here before. It just makes so much sense. Airports are not just a place for you to catch a plane. It's a place to dine and shop. It is also part of the experience of the travel. And I think they really get it. So when I say repurpose retail space, I'm thinking that we see a lot more of this in 2019, because I think they're proving out the model right now. And if I had to get far future on us a little bit, I think shopping malls could become new destinations for places. You know, if you combine driverless cars and train stations, old derelict department stores and shopping malls could have new life if you give them the floor space of something like a Citizen Supply, where you have many vendors that exist in a place as a hub for transportation. So these become, new forms of hubs of transport. We don't need bus stations that are out in the cold. We can bring people into centers of commerce to do the same. And it's all private partnership. It's all private industry that's driving that. And I think that's why commercial real estate will help drive.
Oh my gosh. I love that so much. Yeah. I just had this vision in my head of like the old West when people won't sell out their lands, the railroad's like, no, that's you got to sell out your lands, and, we'll pay you two times on the dollar. And I just imagine that happening.
Yeah. Exactly. I drink your milkshake.
It's right. There will be blood all over again.
Yeah.
That's 2019 in a nutshell.
There will. Oh, I love that. I love that. That's a phenomenal place to end it. Great. Why don't you take us
home?
Thanks
for listening,
Brian,
to our show. We had a great time talking about retail today. We hope you did a good time listening to us. And as always, we want your feedback. So please go to survey.futurecommerce.fm and fill out our survey and provide us with some valuable feedback that will shape the future of our show, the future of future commerce. And so we really appreciate that. Also, if you have a chance, hop over to iTunes or Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, anywhere you listen, and leave us a review there too. We'll always appreciate a 5-star review and any feedback you want to give us. You can reach us on our site through the discuss box on the site, or you can reach us on LinkedIn, Twitter, or anywhere else that you, any other social engagement point out there these days, everywhere, Instagram. And so with that, I appreciate you listening to the show. Retail tech is moving fast.
And future commerce is moving faster.